Opportunity Employer.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Michael Astrew is the Commissioner of Social Security.
Cutting back our administrative budget to the bone is really penny wise and pound foolish. And I think most of the more informed members up there understand that, but you know, you get this sense that they just don't know what to do, and you know, it's very frustrating up there because you don't get a clean answer as to why we can't do this.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
Sign up for Federal News Radio's email alerts to stay on top of the latest news affecting the federal community. Go to federalnewsradio.com and click the sign up button at the top of the page.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm here today with Mark Pietrasanta, who is the CTO at Aqualent, and Dick Stapleton, HHS Deputy Director of Web and New Media. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you doing?
Good morning, John.
Good morning, John.
I would think top of mind of most of my listeners here is health services and mobile. I mean, this is really a hot topic in the newspapers and the blogs, the web chats. Everyone's talking about, you know, what's Obama going to do with health care? All this money's being thrown around, electronic medical records. What about these mobile devices that are flooding in? Can you combine them? What can you do? I thought we'd have a good show if we brought in a couple people to talk about just that topic today. And we're going to do a little bit of deep dive into some big successful programs that HHS has had and how they maybe had a company like Aqualent help them on that. And the first thing I like to do is the listeners kind of scratching their head going, well, geez, how do these guys wind up where they're at? And Dick Stapleton's got a great background, including ABC News and a whole bunch of different things. Dick, why don't you tell us about your background, how you wound up at HHS, please?
Well, serendipity, I guess. Yes, I have a background in broadcasting, and ironically, one of the stops on the career was at WTOP here in Washington.
What a big circle.
Big circle indeed. New digs here. These are nice.
Yeah. These are WGMS studios here. Yeah, real fancy.
Ah, yes. But then that was back in the 70s. And then on to a little stint at NBC when NBC tried to do a network all-news radio service.
Many have failed.
And it did.
Yeah.
Colossally. You'll appreciate this, and I won't go too far, but standing in a control room at NBC Network doing all news radio, and just as you did your own, you're doing your own board here, there would be a producer who would tap the director, who would tap the engineer and say, hit cart.
Yeah, that's not a good technique.
Yeah, different era. And then from there to ABC News and senior editor there, and then to CBS News as an executive producer, and the job of my lifetime, which was to be Charles Kuralt's radio producer.
And, wow. So good background to understand a little bit about communications, I would think, and how to communicate complex ideas to a wide range of audience.
I spend a great deal of time thinking about how we communicate. By we, I'm saying we as a society. We, now in my role at Health and Human Services, how we and the government interact and communicate with the citizenry. I had a wonderful career in broadcasting, and then it was, oh my God, what am I going to do? Life is over. And I went to work on the dark side for the federal government, and somebody invented the internet. I think it was Al somebody.
Yep.
And I thought, oh my God, I'm back. Gutenberg has just invented movable type. This is going to revolutionize everything. And it has. And it has been a thrill to have been and continue to be a part of this revolution, evolution, not just in technology. Technology is the driver, but it's how We are revolutionizing how we communicate as individuals, and then how we function as a society. And we're just at the beginning of this.
Great. And the other half equation here, Mark Pietrasanta, CTO, Aqualent. A little bit about your background, please, Mark.
Sure, definitely, John. I've actually always been in technology since I was in grade school, actually. I started working at a local community college as a computer monitor back in the mini computer days. We had a DEC PDP. Had a big DEC PDP 11, 34, turned into a 44. There was an IBM 370. So lots of cool stuff there, helping the college kids out with their computer homework. I went to school at NYU and majored in both philosophy and computer science. And that sounds really disjointed, but they're actually very related. Ultimately, everything with computer programming, and as Dick said, it's not really about the technology. It's more about solving the problems and looking at all of these as actual problems to be solved. The technology is a means in many cases to solve those problems, but philosophy is all about thinking about how do you solve problems. And so the two work together very well.
One problem that HHS had was how to engage citizens. Obama talks about engaging citizens, and you want to engage citizens with health centers. Okay, so here's the big picture. A lot of citizens want to engage with health centers, a lot of services that the federal government provides. What's the best way to do it? Skywriting, print ads in the yellow pages, or maybe mobile applications? I think, Dick, this is the kind of the first decision tree you had to come up with was, well, geez, if we're going to come up with Health Resources Service Administration is going to come up with helping people know about health centers, have to figure out how we're going to do it. And this is the first step, was just maybe looking at mobile applications for that.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And part of this is understanding your audience, understanding where they go to get information, how they are accessing information today, and that is changing dramatically. The use of mobile devices is growing significantly in many fields, but specifically our topic today in the area of health. People are using their mobile devices to access health information. They don't so much go there to look up background information on some disease that they've heard about someplace or that they're doing research. It really is episodic. I've just been told I need birth control. Where do I go get it? I've been told that my kid needs an influenza shot. Where do I go get it? I need health care. Where do I get health care? And so that marriage now of that kind of very specific targeted audience information to a targeted audience, and then incorporating mapping so that, you know, you need to get to a health center, you're in your car, you get on your mobile phone and you plug in and you look and you get addresses of the closest health center or a flu clinic if you're looking for a flu shot. You can get directions to it. You can get the hours, the phone number. It becomes very seamless and effortless. In particular, the mobile use is growing with certain what we call underserved audiences, people that we have a difficult time getting good health information to. They typically are using mobile devices, and they don't own a computer. They don't own a desktop or a laptop.
Yeah, so It almost sounds like Africa. It's like people have cell phones, but they don't have computers. You know, it's kind of interesting application.
Yeah, it's interesting. Sometimes economics drives the adaptation of technology because you can't afford the existing technology. And as technology evolves and all of a sudden something new comes on the horizon and it's cheaper and more effective, and people jump over the old technology and go to the new technology.
We're going to have to take a break when we get back, talk more about HRSA.gov and about the mobile website. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Mark Pietrasanta, CTO at Aqualent, and Dick Stapleton, HHS Deputy Director of Web and New Media.
It's the only program of its kind in the world, a unique opportunity to help strengthen our country's defense and further your career. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University's School of Management. The only executive MBA degree tailored to developing leaders and managers in the U.S. defense industry. a unique combination of high-caliber executive business education, defense industry-specific knowledge, and hands-on learning designed to accelerate your career in the military, government, and corporate defense sectors, all without the career interruption of a traditional degree. Learn more at som.gmu.edu/defense. That's som.gmu.edu/defense. Do it today, because the last day to apply for the fall semester is July 15th. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University, helping our country's defense, advancing your career.
The Ballistic Missile Defense Report is provided by Raytheon.
Russian President Dmitry Medvedev recently expressed reservations about a European missile shield and Russia's participation in the system. In a letter to leaders of NATO member nations, Medvedev clarified his country's position on and concerns about missile defense progress and cooperation. The United States' current approach for missile defense in Europe would deploy land and sea-based interceptors around Europe. In response to these concerns, the State Department reiterated its intention to cooperate with Russia on missile defense.
5 million hours of experience, 19 direct hit intercepts, unmatched engineering. Raytheon Standard Missile 3 is preserving freedom at home and around the world. Now Raytheon engineers are developing the next generation SM-3. When seconds matter and there's no margin for error, Raytheon Standard Missile 3 delivers. In fact, there's nothing standard about it. Raytheon, customer success is our mission.
The ComSatCom report, provided by Hughes.
It doesn't take a disaster or cyber attack to knock out a terrestrial communications network. One simple construction error or backhoe cut can do it. A diverse path satellite backup solution to a primary landline network is essential to ensure continuity of operations, or COOP, to keep defense networks running no matter the situation. National programs must have a COOP backup for terrestrial connections with inherent security functions to protect voice, video, and data transmissions. Hughes Defense Solutions meet U.S. TRANSEC and FIPS 140-2 Security Level 2 standards for secure global connectivity wherever your mission may take you. Hughes has the technology and experience to deliver the right COOP solutions on time and on budget.
To learn more about Hughes Defense Solutions and contract vehicles, visit today's complete ComSatCom report on federalnewsradio.com or visit Hughes on the web at defense.hughes.com.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight for May is the Susan G. Komen Global Race for the Cure, happening Saturday, June 4th on the National Mall. Whether you run, walk, or in the case of our WTOP colleagues, sleep, we can help end breast cancer forever. Join WTOP as they sleep in for the cure. Fight breast cancer without leaving your bed. Donate today at WTOP.com, search sleep. This message brought to you by Papa John's and Federal News Radio.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Mark Pietrasanta, CTO at Aquilent, and Dick Stapleton, HHS Deputy Director of Web and New Media. The new media we're talking about is handheld devices and getting information to citizens with a handheld device. Mark, I'm going to ask you, this is it's kind of a challenging opportunity here. 3,000 health centers across the United States. And you've got to figure out a way to help HHS communicate information to all these different centers geographically dispersed. Do you have an app for that? Do you have a web-enabled site? Do you have a regular site? I mean, what was the thought process? What was the strategy involved in this? Start with the users? What did you start off with?
That's exactly right. We started with the users because it is all about the users. The goal here is to get information about those health centers to the users that need them. And those users cut across a pretty broad demographic. It's people without health insurance. It's people who are underinsured. And that could be just about anybody. Even if you're switching jobs, sometimes you don't have insurance for up to a month. So the need for these health centers covers a lot of people. And in order to get to them effectively, we have to understand what their actual needs are. Aquilent started with working with HHS and going out to talk to the actual users that need to get to these health centers, the users that are going to the health centers to understand how do they find information. Do they use computers? Do they use cell phones? What kind of cell phones do they use? And to talk to even the surrounding social workers that those users access as they work their way to the health centers. And that gave us a really good picture of the type of users, how they get information. As Dick said earlier, how it's very event driven. They're not researching this information ahead of time. They're looking for it when they have a specific need. So that gave us a really good profile of the users. And what we learned was just about every one of the people that need to find these health centers have some sort of cell phone. There's, in fact, about 90%, more than 90% penetration of cell phones in the United States. So we determined that that was a very effective way to get to these users. And one of the first ways we explored that was through a mobile application and also a mobile website and a full website. So we wanted to make sure we at least had that coverage. From the mobile application standpoint, the first round of that is on the iOS devices. That has the sort of greatest penetration at the time that we started that, but that's moving towards also developing one for Android, developing a mobile website that can be used by any mobile phone.
You know, Dick, I just want to ask you, I guess the first approach is to let people know that these centers exist.
Exactly.
That's the first thing.
Yeah.
And what kind of went through your mind in trying to advertise that, let people know that? I know we have the website here, and I just want to let the listeners know it's hrsa.gov/about/mobile. That's pretty simple, remember?
Hopefully. That's always the difficulty. We get these, you just gave the URL, and we end up when we have these large websites with URLs that go on forever and ever and ever, and nobody can remember them. So it's very difficult. So the marketing that has to complement the creation of the service to let people know that the service is out there, that's critical.
You know, Mark, if you look at the statistics, and, you know, everyone has a different statistic, it looks like about one-third of the market smartphone, maybe two-thirds is feature phone, something mm-hmm. like that. Did that go into your decision of saying, well, geez, you know, not everyone has an iPhone. Most people have feature phones, so you have to provide for the apples and the oranges. Is that one of the strategic decisions you made?
That is, and none of these projects are over on their first round. So, as I mentioned, some of the strategy is to cover other smartphones. Another part of the strategy is to cover feature phones and to provide access via text messaging. That's kind of a lowest common denominator, but it's two-way text messaging is the plan, and that will allow the consumers, the citizens who need to find these health centers to find them, to get information about them, maybe even to get reminders of appointments that they have. So to be able to access everybody who has a phone, and that covers the vast majority, again, of people who need to find these health centers.
Dick, let me ask you a question. Back in 9/11, the Washington Post had this big surge in users. I mean, this is the classic story about how to handle a surge. My guess is that right about school time, around September 1st, is when everyone's going, oh, geez, little Billy's got to get his shot. Is this what you had it designed to, maybe these unexpected surges?
Well, we design all of our websites for what's surge protection.
Well, that's an old-fashioned word, but I guess
it is. But it's we'll see some kind of an episode. Something will happen in the news. There'll be a TV documentary on something, and we will have a spike that will go through the clouds, and we have to be prepared for that.
Yeah, and there are a couple of key ways that we handle that. One is through what's called a content delivery network that allows us to cache things out. Mm-hmm. And scale pretty dramatically for a good chunk of the content. And then the other is a topic probably for another discussion, but using cloud-based resources to dynamically scale as the needs arise, but really cost efficiently.
So, Mark, how long did this project take?
The project to develop the mobile app was actually fairly quick. It was about a 3-month project.
Whoa.
Yeah. And that's, again, because we knew we had really good access to the users. We have a very solid approach for approaching those users and for understanding how to solve the problem. It's all about solving the problem. The technology, again, is just a tool. It's not about the technology. It's about the needs of the citizens. It's about the needs of the users. So we just followed that process, understood what the users' needs, and then chunked off a piece that was quickly achievable to show some benefit.
So, Dick, when you sat down with Mark and other folks, you kind of scratched your head and said, we've got to put some people on airplanes and send them out to Iowa and do these surveys. I mean, it looks like there are face-to-face surveys done here. Is that right?
I'll defer to Mark on that.
Ah.
Yeah, we did send people around, not necessarily to Idaho, but we did send people around and do face-to-face surveys to make sure that we understood not just metropolitan areas, but also less urban areas to understand how these health centers are used and the different types of users and the different types of technology in use.
And you have to ask them, well, geez, do you, if no one had an iPhone, then why would you ever even consider iOS? I mean,
correct.
It doesn't make any sense. But if about a third of them do, then you have to respond to that.
Yep, and that's not the end, again, because we need it, particularly for anything sponsored by the federal government, we need to make sure that we're covering all of the devices that are out there. You can't really play favorites.
Yeah. So, Dick, when you came up with this, or whoever came up with the idea for an app, you had to present this to management. And did they say that, oh, apps, that's just a passing fad or something? Or did you have to convince people that, no, come on, let's think this through?
It's interesting that so many people think that the federal government is very stodgy, very slow to react and adapt. And really quite the opposite is the case. I spend more of my time reining people in.
That's good.
Than I am trying to sell something new. We go through, you know, everybody wanted a blog. Everybody wants to be on Twitter. Everybody wants to be on Facebook. And I keep asking the question, why? And I'm not being a smart aleck, but it's an investment in time and resources. Why do you want to be X? How does it fit your communication strategy? So, you know, as soon as the word mobile popped up in the media, in the lexicon, everybody jumped on that. Oh, we got to be mobile. We got to be mobile. So it's not a problem moving into new areas.
Well, good. I can see in the commercial world, there would be some pounding on the table saying, well, what's the ROI here, buddy? Mark, who's this Mark guy anyway? What does he know about this stuff? And 3 months, I mean, that's pretty fast to develop an app and get it out there. I just would think there'd be some push and pull in the situation. But I'm glad that HHS saw that this is the way to communicate to end users. I mean,
I think this was a pretty easy decision to make.
Ooh, that's good to know.
Made sense.
Big obstacle you found in designing this app, Mark?
Not really. I mean, all technology is about the same, really, when you boil it down. And, you know, some of the bigger obstacles, aside from just determining what the users actually need and what's the right approach, it was narrowing it down to what do we do first? We can't do everything at once. What do we do first? And another obstacle is looking at the long-term maintenance. This is something that needs to be maintained over time, needs to be enhanced over time. And when you get down to some of these mobile devices and you look at multiple technologies and having to have people that know multiple languages and update them simultaneously, websites, mobile websites, Android devices, iOS devices, that can be a bit challenging. So really it's looking at a long-term strategy for how to keep these maintained over time.
So find a health center. Someone can go there and not only find out where the closest health center is, but get directions. I went there this morning, by the way.
Yeah.
And I plugged in my home zip code, and I didn't know there was one in Alexandria. I didn't know there was one. I had no idea. I mean, who knew?
That's right.
I mean, this is answering the question of if you want to engage citizens. Well, first of all, Dick, you have to tell them, hey, we're out here. We're right down in Alexandria, down the street from you.
We have information, you know.
Yeah, and it's not just taxes that's interested. They're the services they can provide to help people, especially your audience, which is the uninsured, the isolated, medically vulnerable, but much more than that, isn't it?
Biggest issue that we have in the federal, I'll talk about HHS. We have so much information, and it is so difficult to get to for the consumer.
I keep thinking of a little kid going to a library and reaching up and not being able to reach the books on the top shelf. HHS has all that information on the top shelf. What a handheld device is, it finally lets them interact or find out more about that. Or maybe they wouldn't get a desktop computer and do a search for a medical center. I mean, you wouldn't do that, but you might want to go.
Yeah, but we've got to do the work because a little kid comes in and a mobile device is going to get this, find this stuff, but we've got to make it available. We've got to pull the right books off the top shelf and put them down on a lower shelf that people can reach.
Yeah, and make it consumable, too. The same information that is in a book or that's on a giant web page is not necessarily appropriate to be shown on a mobile device. It's got to be, a phrase that Dick likes to use that I really like is bite-sized chunks, right? You've got to have these bite-sized pieces of information that are consumable for that very small screen for also the mode of operation. People are looking for things quickly. They don't want to read pages and pages of information on their smartphone. They want to get a piece of information, find it out, and then move forward.
And you just can't take a standard website and snap your finger and expect that website to be viewable on a handheld device either. You have to change your whole modality. It's almost like switching languages.
That's right. That's right. It's not just the information. It's the structure of the information. You need to, as Dick said, kind of limit that information for what's appropriate for a mobile device and then limit the content.
I have is mobile is sexy right now, and no knock to Mark and his wonderful team, but an API is easy. That's the fun part.
Yeah, that's the easy
It's
part
taking
the
these government website pages that scroll on forever and ever and ever and rewriting them, repackaging. That's work.
Oh, I know. We're going to take a quick break. The first half of the show, we talked about hrsa.gov/about/mobile and learned about accessing information about medical information for handheld devices. We're going to make a transition here, same kind of category, and talk about vaccines.gov after the break. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Mark Pietrasanta, CTO at Aquilent, and Dick Stapleton, HHS Deputy Director of Web and New Media.
Discover, connect, collaborate, secure. The i2 America's User Conference 2011 kicks off June 7th at the Crystal Gateway Marriott. i2 brings together top minds from defense, law enforcement, national security, and commercial sectors for 3 full days to help you accelerate your mission. Experience the latest innovations that have helped make our world safer for over 20 years. The i2 America's User Conference is the only place to share information and collaborate with hundreds of other i2 users. Register today at i2group.com.
The Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program open season is here. Did you know that at least 70% of people over age 65 will need long-term care at some point in their lives? Long-term care services are expensive. You may need to rely on loved ones or pay for long-term care services out of your income or assets. Fortunately, the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program was designed to help protect against the high cost of care. Open season ends on June 24th. Visit ltcfeds.com to learn more today.
From text messages to apps, games, and email, the mobile internet is becoming a bigger part of our lives every day. And whether we live in the city or on the open countryside, all Americans should benefit from mobile internet investment. That's why LightSquared is investing in the first nationwide wholesale-only 4G LTE mobile broadband network integrated with coast-to-coast satellite coverage. By partnering with wireless service providers, retailers, and device manufacturers, LightSquared is making seamless, ultra-fast mobile broadband a reality for every American. Send an email from the Grand Canyon. Download movies in minutes while on the go. Make calls hundreds of miles from the nearest cell tower. It's all possible with the LightSquared network. LightSquared, lighting the way to a wireless broadband revolution. Learn how LightSquared is creating jobs, encouraging innovation, and investing in vital American infrastructure at LightSquared.com.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
U.S. agents are on the hunt around the world for Osama bin Laden's associates.
The first step is identification of the individual.
The second step?
What country are they located in?
Fred Burton, Vice President of Intelligence at Stratfor. Mullah Omar, Ayman al-Zawahiri, and Anwar al-Awlaki are at the top of the list. And Burton says if any of them are in Pakistan...
Well, that's going to pose a unique problem at this time.
The problem is they may escape before the U.S. and Pakistan repair their frayed relationship. I'm J.J. Green.
A concern of every pilot is the weather and needing to know if the conditions are about to deteriorate either on the flight path or where the aircraft is landing. That's where AirInc comes in. At the aircrew's request, AirInc texts the latest weather information directly to the cockpit, thus providing pilots the information they need to decide whether to change routes or divert to another landing location. For more information and career opportunities, log on to arinc.com.
Do you struggle with sharing real-time information while protecting critical technology infrastructures? Do you want to learn how to meet the sophisticated threat landscape head-on? Then join your government IT, security, and management peers at the 2011 Symantec Government Symposium on June 14th. Hear from keynote speakers General Colin Powell and Department of Homeland Security Undersecretary Rand Beers. Share your own experiences and knowledge. Register today at www.symantec.com/symposium. That's www.symantec.com/symposium.
Here's Honorable James Peek, Senior Vice President for the Health Industry at CGI Federal and former Secretary of the VA on the Visualizing the 21st Century of Healthcare Today panel, sponsored by HIMSS.
An example of how records can help a group of patients when they're in electronic form. Look at what happened with the VA population in Katrina. Everybody else was trying to find the paper that was flooded in the basements. The VA electronically moved those records to Houston, so they were waiting when the folks that were evacuated got there.
To listen to the whole program made possible by HIMSS, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
HIMSS, the global leader in health IT education, invites healthcare policy leaders, IT decision makers, and providers to the Government Health IT Conference and Exhibition, June 14th and 15th. This is your chance to see how the latest innovations in federal and state interagency initiatives utilize IT to achieve improved care delivery and quality. Register at govhealthitconference.com and share successes, challenges, and best practices with decision makers from government, industry, and the healthcare community.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, we're speaking with Mark Pietrasanta, CTO at Aquiland, and Dick Stapleton, HHS Deputy Director of Web and New Media. Going to switch gears here. Going to talk about vaccines.gov and citizen engagement. Now, we have another typical topic here. The big dog Obama says, hey, HHS, you got to engage citizens with all the information you have. What are you going to do? Well, the other topic, HRSA, said, hey, maybe we can have handheld information to give people local centers. Well, this is kind of a same church, different pew kind of a concept here. Vaccines.gov, same idea. September 1st, little Billy's got to go to school. Well, what about this vaccine stuff? You can go to vaccines.gov and reach in that library for the books that are on the top shelf and bring it down. Not quite as easy as it sounds, though. It's got this interesting little tagline. It's called vaccines.gov. Your best shot at good health. Dick, was that your job? Who came up with that?
I won't go there.
It's a snappy title, and that's always good. Let's talk about designing websites. And Mark, what's the first thing you start off with when you look at coming up with a new website, especially with a website that has a lot of information that has to be presented easily?
Yeah, and in the case of vaccines.gov, and what's often the situation is there are a lot of existing websites with existing content. And in vaccines.gov case, there were multiple websites that had a lot of information about vaccines. And the challenge was to pull all that together in one place. So using that book analogy again, it was particularly complicated because citizens had to go to multiple places, CDC, HHS, different websites to get a comprehensive view of what to do about vaccines. That's not helpful to the citizen, that you want the citizen to come to one place to get all the information they need, no matter where it's located in the federal government. And so pulling that information together, making it citizen-centric was key to this effort.
And I think people who have information in silos may not be as willing to share that information as you might think, just being humans. All right, Dick? I mean, this is a problem.
Absolutely.
You must have had.
Absolutely. It's a huge problem.
And so, Dick, what was your role in all this? Were you trying to just reach out to different agencies, trying to find out where stuff was and try to come up with a strategy for this?
Well, my role is to be an advocate and push for consumer topic-based websites where we tap into the information that is scattered across multiple websites and cherry pick that information and bring the best information together in one place and package so that we've got all the information you need to know about vaccines and vaccination and immunization in one place. So the consumer has one place to come to get the information. They don't have to go all over looking for it in places that they don't even know exist. To use your book analogy, it's as though you're going to a Barnes & Noble bookstore and you're looking for cookbooks. And instead of going to the cookbook section, the cookbooks are arranged by publisher. And so you're wandering all over the store. Now Macmillan's got a cookbook and then Better Homes and Gardens. That's the way our websites are today. They're scattered by publisher and not by subject.
So Mark, was part of this process, again, doing surveys and asking citizens what you want and when? Is that part of it, too? Or?
That absolutely is part of it, to understand how they access the information. In this case, a big piece of it was around usability testing. So to actually, since we're taking a lot of disparate information that was previously scattered across multiple websites and pulling it together, we needed to understand how do citizens really want to get at this information? How do users look for information about vaccines? Do they look by diseases first? Do they look by the vaccine? Do they look by age of their child. So understanding the various ways they want to come in and get that information, and then organizing all of this previously disparate content by the way the citizen and users want to find it.
So it's not disease alphabetically. It's what it's done. It's presented by, well, geez, you know, what age group and maybe what kind of health condition do you have? And then and maybe some information on a disease, and then something random like health tips or something, kind of big general categories that most humans can understand. Is that
the way people come into a vaccine site and looking for information? It is age specific. I mean, we vaccinate people based on their age. That's people know that. That's what the doctor tells them. It's what the family magazines all talk about. So you organize your content the way people come looking for it.
That's right.
It's being logical. It's being commonsensical as opposed to, you know.
Right. No, absolutely. And that's again, everything has to start with the consumers of your content. And usability testing is one means to get there. Interviewing is another means to get there. Card sorting. There's lots of great tools to understand how your users want to get at this information. But it's really important to organize it the way people are trying to get at it. Otherwise, it's not that useful.
So you put your ear to the ground, you find it's a train coming, and then you got to design a track or a rail or a derail or something here. So there's website development, there's a graphic design of the website, there's content syndication, and getting that migrated into the site from the disparate. What about usability? And then let's test it first, Dick, before we can go live. And then there's publishing the content. And oh, by the way, it's going to change. Well, I'm about to back out of the room if someone wanted me to do that. But it's a step-by-step methodical process. And I think the idea of it's going to change, and you have to build that right into the process, don't you, Dick?
Well, you publish, and then you go back and usability test again.
Huh.
Because what you think works sometimes doesn't. And the only way you get at that, now we have tools that we put on a website. You know, did this page work? Did it help you? A surprising number of people take the time to click that and say yes or no. And then they get a little box. Well, you know, how can we make it better? You learn a lot. Just ask your customer whether you're doing a good job. You know, Ed Koch and, you know, used to run around New York City saying, how am I doing?
Yeah.
Smart.
Yeah. It's. I would never think people would be that willing to provide information, but that really, there's almost half of your job, Mark, is listening.
That's right.
To what,
absolutely.
Nothing to do with technology.
That's right.
And IPv6 and TCP/IP and cloud computing.
That's
and,
right.
No, it's what do they want?
Yep.
How can I use my skill set and grab some of Dick's knowledge of a large enterprise and produce a website that is usable? Mm-hmm. What kind of guidelines do you use for usability?
That's a great question. I mean, again, fundamentally comes down to talking to the users. One of the key things with a site like this, as you mentioned, the kind of ongoing changes, the it's not just getting all the information once and putting it out there. This is changing constantly. And good content management practices and good content management systems are really critical. And building that change into the processes, building the fact that this isn't a one-shot deal. We're going to have updates to content. We're going to have syndicated content we need to continue to consume and produce over time. Users are going to change maybe how they access information. Information's going to change. Vaccines may change. And so building all that change into the management of the content, not just that first release of the site, is really what's critical.
And Dick, from your perspective, you've got to look at it and think 5 years down the road and say, well, oh, geez, this Mark's kind of a young fellow. He doesn't realize that, you know, kids grow up, they get older, and they travel outside the United States. Mm-hmm. And you wind up in Belen du Pra, in the mouth of the Amazon. All of a sudden, you got to have different time vaccines.
Exactly.
And maybe Mark has never been to Mato Grosso or the some of the areas in Brazil I've been to. But you have to have special shots, don't you?
Yes, you do. You do.
And so you have to. I mean, there's some concepts there that you have to have a wide range of people in order to. It's like many cooks, ruin the broth. I think many cooks. You have to have many cooks for this,
yes,
don't you?
Yes, you do. You do. And you're serving multiple needs, multiple audiences. And you also, you fold in this need to inform people. So people come in looking for one piece of information, and you want to let them know there's more information here for you. There are other things you need to know. Vaccines in particular. Everybody thinks about getting their kids vaccinated and so on. Older people need certain vaccinations also, and nobody talks about that. So that's where you know, that's the end of aisle display as you get walking down to get the milk.
And it is an ongoing process in terms of understanding those users. As much as we'd love to have 100% of the users profiled before we launch a site, that's not possible. So as Dick mentioned, those feedback mechanisms are also really helpful to understand maybe some of the user communities we didn't understand to begin with, or we didn't get to begin with. And so, again, building that change in over time, understanding the users over time is really helpful.
Think about that. 100% pro. Well, and there's people being born every day. And people from outside the United States are going here. And we can take a quick break. We can come back. I want to ask you about foreign languages and how that went into the whole decision of how to design this and how much flexibility to have for different languages, maybe a change of language in the future and how to adapt to that. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Mark Pietrasanta, CTO at Aquilent, and Dick Stapleton, HHS, Deputy Director of Web and New Media.
If you're an IT professional looking to advance your career, it's anything but a game. Which is why UMBC is the only university in Maryland to offer graduate programs in human-centered computing, where students apply principles from human-computer interaction, behavioral sciences, and design. UMBC also offers graduate programs in information systems, including an online master's in IS. Get the credential that makes a difference and put some muscle back into your resume. Find out more at is.umbc.edu today.
The website of the week is the Google Transparency Report. Now, this site includes an interactive map so you can click on different countries. The Chinese officials consider censorship demands to be state secrets, so we cannot disclose that information at this time. This can show traffic patterns. If a country blocks internet access, you can immediately see this. You can see if any countries are blocking internet traffic. The Google Transparency Report.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Stress. Sometimes a little of it can be a good thing. It can motivate and inspire us. But most of the time, stress is not our friend. Work stress can cause depression, headaches, sleep problems. It can increase your risk of disease and on-the-job injury. At Kaiser Permanente, we believe that stress is serious business. Because when employees are stressed, everyone suffers. So we promote programs that help employees deal with the demands of work and home in healthy ways, like stress breaks, workplace yoga, stress relief classes, and more. It's a total health approach. That's what Kaiser Permanente does for employers that choose us. Provides tools for companies to keep employees healthy, less stressed, and more productive. Find out how a Kaiser Permanente plan can help your employees and your business thrive. Go to kp.org/thrive9to5.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Listen next week for a special edition of the Business of Government Hours Conversation with Authors series, exploring ideas for improving government effectiveness. What is open government and how has the Open Government Directive sought to change the way government does business? Join host Michael Keegan as he discusses these questions and more with Professors Guan Ho Lee and Yang Hoon Kwa, authors of the recent IBM Center report, An Open Government Implementation Model, Moving to Increased Public Engagement, next week on the Business of Government Hours.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth every Saturday at 10 a.m. here on 1500 a.m. This week, my special guest will be Dean Catino of Monument Wealth Management. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia, serving the entire D.C. metro area. Check us out on the web at www.ofplaw.com.
The FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com takes a look at the issues surrounding cloud computing through the eyes of those who are using it every day. We'll share with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the FedCloud blog on Twitter. The FedCloud blog is sponsored by Cisco and Intel.
With vacation time just around the corner, are you ready to go? Since 1967, Ackerman Security Systems has been keeping families like yours safe and secure. For just $18.95 a month, you can trust in the protection of Ackerman's nationally certified monitoring center. And Ackerman offers the latest technology, like cell phone control, wireless monitoring, and remote video to your web-enabled phone, iPad, or laptop. Call 888-999-1070 or on the web at Ackerman Security.com.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Mark Pietrasanta, CTO at Aquiland, and Dick Stapleton, HHS, Deputy Director of Web and New Media. We've been talking about new media for an hour here, it seems. You know, talked about HRSA.gov, talked about mobile applications, kind of switched gears, talked about vaccines.gov. And I'm going to throw in a curveball here. I think our listeners may want to do up close and personal. So I have my patented 10-question test to see what level of nerdosity you have here. We're going to start off with Dick Stapleton. You're your first computer.
Very early 80s. It was an Atari 400.
Right. First cell phone, what year?
70s.
That's impressive.
Well, you know, Mark and I were talking, and I'm trying to think, you know, when did I get my first BlackBerry? And then he reminded me that those clunkers that went in the trunk of your car were
phones.
Somebody, I was working for CBS News at the time, and they wanted to put a cell phone on my sailboat.
No.
And I drew the line there.
What kind of phone you use today? Cell phone.
A BlackBerry.
BlackBerry. Yeah. Interesting. Tablet device, iPad, anything like that?
iPad, too.
Hmm.
Got me here.
Yeah. Social networking you're involved in?
Facebook, a little bit of Twitter, LinkedIn.
Great.
You kind of name it.
Mark, by the way, I want the listeners to know that Aquiland, Government Contractor of the Year, top 50 best places to work. So they must, I'm going up there after the show. It must be a great place to be. They must have, you know, free dry cleaning and free lunch and all kinds of coffee everywhere, huh?
Look forward to having you up there.
Your first computer, CTO?
A long time ago, 1981. Back in that community college was in Altair.
Mm-hmm. I remember those.
Yeah, it was. They made it in kits. They had vector graphics, which was pretty cool.
That was a big deal.
They read and stored their programs on punch tape, which was a huge advancement over punch cards.
Yeah, I remember paper tape.
Paper tape, yep.
Don't say that to my kids. They're not going to believe me. Paper tape.
Walk around with these spools of paper tape, yeah.
For cell phone.
For cell phone was a little bit later. I didn't get it till I moved down here. And so that was around 1992, and it was a car phone.
That makes sense. Yeah. That'll be in touch.
Yeah.
What kind of cell phone do you use today?
I use an iPhone 4.
iPhone. Mm-hmm. And what do you have in front of you right there?
iPad 2.
An iPad 2. This one filling up with iPads. My.
Also use a Kindle.
Social networking sites?
Nook here.
All of them. Facebook, Twitter.
All of them.
Yeah. LinkedIn, everything.
Good. Your last book read? Piece of paper book.
Bioweapon, which is a Doomstar series. It's a good science fiction book. The gratuitous sort of corporate book was also Breakthrough Company.
Yeah.
Which is also
my daughter last night was reading sci-fi. It's still hanging in.
Oh, sci-fi
is
great.
Sci-fi is still popular.
And these tablets make it very accessible.
And she's an engineer and she reads sci-fi. Kind of interesting that you wouldn't think that would be the connection, but a great connection.
Yep.
There are listeners who are maybe listening to this over Christmas time or I don't know when, and they're interested in HHS, or maybe they're looking at mobile and they're trying to figure out, well, geez, you know, this public-private partnership. Here's a guy from the government's got to communicate these big ideas, and here's a technical guy. How do they all work together? What are some of the best practices? Dick, let me ask you about this foreign language. We have a guy here right in front of us named Pietrasanta, huh? I mean, there's a foreign name. He must be a foreigner. But there's a lot of foreign languages spoken in the United States. In Arlington, they have 140 different languages.
Right.
How do you address that issue?
Cautiously. I mean, it's a clear need. It's very expensive. So it comes back to what we talked about at the very beginning of this broadcast. You look at your user and their needs. You don't translate every word that you put on the internet, but you look at the ethnic audiences, the ethnic language, non-native speaking people, and you see what are their needs, and then you try to get that translated to them. Flu.gov, when we had the H1N1 pandemic, we translated immediately into Spanish because this emanated
sense.
In the Southwest and out of Mexico. The predecessor to that, we translated into Vietnamese and Chinese because we were worried about H5N1, which was originating in Southeast Asia.
Ah.
So
agile.
You try to match your content to your audience and judiciously translate because you can't begin to afford to translate
everything. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same sort of message where you got to look at who the users are and target them.
Right.
With language, it's not as simple as just language. It's not just the translation, as Dick was saying. You really got to look at the culture, and you've got to understand, you got to target that culture and target how those users in that culture want to get at that information and use that information. And it can be very different. Usability testing is a very effective way to do that. And you have the spectrum of just automated translation, which is very effective and cost effective, to actually native language sites, which have different information architectures, are structured differently, even different content managed differently.
Mark, let me ask you the time management question here. 1,440 minutes in a day. I try to, you know, wrench everything I can out of every single minute. It's hard to do. From a time management perspective, what lessons did you learn from the HRSA project? What lessons did you learn from the vaccines? Would you spend more time in the surveys, less time in the surveys? Would you spend budget, I mean, spend everything in usability? What kind of areas do you think you could improve here?
I think some of the big things learned with the HRSA mobility project was the penetration of mobile in that particular user base. That was unexpected.
It's unexpected for me, too, when I saw that figure. I couldn't believe 90%.
Yeah. Wow. 90%, and in many cases, they're using mobile instead of a computer. They don't have a computer. Yeah. And that information was pretty interesting and surprising, and led to a broader understanding of users as a whole. So, I mean, if there's one thing, it's more time understanding the users. That's what this is all about.
Yeah, it's interesting that here with the CTO guy, hey, you're the tech guy, right? More time with the end users. Dick, do you agree?
That's why we work so well together. I'm seriously, because we have the same basic philosophy.
Great. What about the future? What kind of future projects do we have in store? What you're looking at, Dick? What's down the road here, maybe 3 to 5 years out? Where do you see this thing changing?
I see the delivery of information changing significantly. I think that the federal government is going to have to board up and put a board across the existing federal websites and redesign everything. Right now, we have this staggering amount of information. But it's like sending the consumer to a Costco regional distribution warehouse to get a quart of milk.
You can't just get
it. We need to start building consumer retail information outlets.
Yeah.
Information is a commodity. And we need to sell the commodity, make it available the same way grocery stores make food available. They have, you know, they have supermarkets. They have Costco, you know, where you can buy in bulk. You got supermarkets where you can do all your shopping. But then you got 7-Elevens. You know, where you can run in and buy one or two things. Some places there are drive-through where you can drive through and get a quart of milk. That's your mobile.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about HRSA. This is for the individual whose grandmother falls down, and where do I get help?
That's right.
And what we're seeing in rural areas is that many emergency rooms are being pulled back, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you're in the middle of nowhere. Something happens. Who are you going to call? Well, I can't afford, but I can afford a phone because I've got to need a phone for work. And so that's what they do. Is that right, Mark?
That's exactly right. And it's, as you said, you didn't know there was two right around you, and a lot of people don't know that. So it's getting that information out to them. And again, as Dick said, I think it's less about pushing information out. It's about making that information accessible, further granularizing it, making sure that it's findable, and also engaging the users more, right? So websites are often about, here's this big piece of information. And even if it's structured well, here's a lot of information for you. Mm-hmm. Engaging the users is one of the incremental steps that we need to do next. So really, it's more interactive. It's engaging them the way they want to be engaged. And you see a start of that with things like the HRSA mobile app.
You know, Dick, you never said in this whole interview, .NET or Ruby or Java or cloud computing. I thought I was going to get beat up with cloud. You didn't even mention any of that stuff. What you mentioned mostly was, what about those citizens? I mean, this is an invert. I thought we were going to get hit with, well, I chose the .NET platform.
We have a huge project going on right now to move everything into the cloud, into net storage and so on. And the consumer couldn't care less. And
you're right.
Doesn't need to.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's the ABC News coming out in you, is that they don't care if you have a cell phone in the back of your car. They want to know if it's going to rain tonight, don't they?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, I as I mentioned, I think at the beginning of this, it's about solving their problems. And technology is just a tool to solve those problems. And that may be strange coming from a CTO, but that's true. And that's important to approach things that way. It's not about pushing the technology out there. It's about using the technology to solve
problems.
Yep. And if any listeners want to use this technology, they can go to hrsa.gov/about/mobile. And then for a different flavor, go to vaccines.gov and look around for all kinds of diseases in the disease index if you want to do that. Or you know, travel tips. Maybe you're going outside the country. I mean, in 1 week, I'm taking my wife to the airport. She's going to Paris for the weekend.
Or if you've got a kid, a young child, you can go there and figure out, all right, he needs this shot at 2 months, this shot at 3 months.
Or I'm getting information from my next door neighbor. Let's see what the straight scoop is. What does this Mark guy know? Well, I go to the internet and find out what they really know. The different types of vaccines are out there, different ages and different audiences there. Going to have to end the interview today. We could go for about 3 more hours on this topic, but maybe we'll hold these questions for the next interview. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with Don Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we had Mark Pietrasanta, CTO at Aqualent, and Dick Stapleton, HHS Deputy Director of Web and New Media. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the 2011 Federal Executive Forum Series on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today's show will discuss secure cloud computing initiatives in the federal government. Here's your host, Jim Fleisig.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Jim Fleisig. During today's show, we will discuss progress with cloud computing in the federal government. With me today on the show are Dave McClure, the Associate Administrator of the Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies at the GSA, Pete Cironis, the Chief Technology Officer, the Department of Energy, Dave Mihelcik, the Chief Technology Officer at DISA, Kurt